I see the night, but I lost all sight of you. I've lost my way, it's hard to find it through. I see the night, but I lost all sight of you. All right, Paris is Burning, that was Lady Hawk from New Zealand. I'm not sure whether that was related to the documentary about the New York City drag ball life at the height of the AIDS crisis, but that's I chose that just because of the title. So you're listening to WMPG. I'm here with Megan McGregor and Steve Bull facilitating a conversation about pride and reflections and lots of really good discussion here. We have somebody on the call, on the line.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Thank you.
Who is this?
This is George Oliver.
Oh, hey.
Hey. I've got a concern a little bit about the historical language that's being used when you're talking about 20 or 30 years ago, using LGBTQ, which of course didn't exist then. And I wonder if you could just sort of comment on it. I mean, obviously, trans people were virtually invisible within the gay and lesbian community. And many gays and lesbians, even as trans people became more visible, were quite uncomfortable with them. I had mixed feelings about what I felt about trans men. I didn't even know any. I know I have a lesbian friend who really railed against the idea of trans women being part of the lesbian community. So I wonder if you could just comment on that issue of labeling and the shift in what we call each other.
Well, first of all, one of the things that I said earlier is that things seem much more, you know, 20 years ago seems like a long time ago, but that was actually still the 21st century. And I think by 2000, we were referring to our movement as LGBT, maybe not Q, but LGBT for sure.
Yeah.
But I do remember in the 70s and 80s having debates, and at that time it was over whether bisexuals should be part of the movement.
Yeah, so, I remember that too.
Yeah, so I think, or, you know, or whether we should just be the gay movement, or whether we should name lesbians. So I actually think it's a very healthy conversation that's gone on throughout my life as a queer person and as an activist, is trying to think of the more inclusive language that we can use. And I know it's ended up being kind of alphabet soup now with so many letters added in, which is sort of why I like queer and trans as the umbrella that I occupy. But in terms of people's discomfort with trans people or bisexuals, that's real, and that's been a really important struggle, I think, for the movement to educate ourselves and each other and recognize that we aren't just one gentle and angry people. We are a multitude, and we are much stronger when we come together. To circle back to the conversation we were having about who's targeted in this state right now, we need to make common cause with people outside of the queer community as well. You know, we'll all fall if we don't lean together and move forward as a group.
And we have to continue.
But I think it's important to acknowledge that there were periods of our history where people did not like each other very much, and it wasn't all sweet and, oh, we're all coming together, blah, blah. There were really periods where people didn't want bisexuals as part of the group, or, you know, didn't want transsexuals as part of the group. So,
I
think we have to be honest about that when we talk about this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, we have to have those frank discussions. You
know? I don't think that time is behind us. I don't think it's like, oh, now everybody is comfortable being, you know, described as queer, or that everyone agrees that every member of that coalition have equal right to be named.
At first, I was put off by the term queer because when I was growing up, that was followed by a fist in the face.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
So, but that changed, and now, especially among young people, when I was around more young people, and now to me, it's an incredibly important inclusive term that's welcoming, and so I embrace it now, and I have arguments with people my age about why I do. But
I mean, I still struggle with it. I mean, it's a, you know, there's a lot of things that you don't think about changing, but gradually over time you do. Excuse me, and you know, I think that's a natural human trait as long as you're moving.
maybe we should have a discussion about what we can substitute the alphabet soup for. Is there a word we can use that would include the alphabet, so it's not this clunky adding more letters and symbols? I don't know. Maybe that's a discussion we should have.
Yeah.
Is there a word we can come up with?
Have another symposium.
Yeah,
what do we
right.
call ourselves?
Yeah.
No, I think, and I you're right. Like the history of how the names have shifted and changed over time is like one of the things I really like to show to students when they come up to the collection, because a lot of times students, especially the bi students, the transgender students, they're like, oh, I want to research, you know, trans history. I want to research bi history. And I have to have that conversation of like, yes, your history exists. The people who you are were there. The terminology has changed so much. So if you do like a word search of a newspaper from XYZ time, that terminology may not be there. So it's this very interesting shift. And there's this, if you come down to Pride today and brave the weather, at our table, I'm going to have on display a lot of facsimiles of the documents we have in the collection. And one of those is one of my favorite ones from our paper from 1991. There's a cartoon of basically two gay guys arguing over the word queer. Of one person is like, queer is the best word ever. I don't see why we're not using this all the time. Yeah. And the other one's like, how dare you use queer? That's a terrible word. We shouldn't be using it.
Yeah.
So the debate has always happened in the community.
Well, one of the first newspapers, radical newspapers in New England was called Fag
Rag. Fag Rag, which we also have in the collection.
And there were discussions around that. And we haven't even gotten into pronouns.
Right,
And language and that stuff. And that's another thing that's being gone after. George, you've made us talk. think about stuff. So thank you for that. Did you have anything else for us today?
No, this is my own little quirky thing that I don't have another word for. But I really don't like the word pride. For me, pride has a particular meaning. It's pride in your accomplishments. I suppose you could say gay community pride, but gay pride is weird to me. It's like saying I'm proud to be left-handed, or I'm proud to be blue-eyed or something. I wish there were a different word for that besides that word. But that's my own quirk. You could talk about that.
Yeah. Well, if it is pride about work, I think I'm proud of the work we've done over the decades, too.
Yeah.
But thanks for the call, and maybe another conversation on that next year at our next thing.
Okay.
But thanks for calling in, George.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye. Wendy had an idea for a question. There you go.
George's comment just reminded me that I wanted to ask people, particularly Steve and Lois, who've been involved in this struggle for decades, what is it that has kept us going? I mean, I like Steve, I'm very proud of the fact that I've been doing this for, you know, 50 years, 45 years, something, long time. And what is it that has kept us moving forward despite the, you know, one step forward, two steps back dance that we often do? That we're in another one of those moments of retrenchment. How come you're still involved? What's kept you going?
Okay, I'll go first. I have done some self-examination on that point over the years, and things have been pointed out to me. And the story I have for this is friends who got to know me through political activism over about 10 or 15 years said, you really have to read Cider House Rules. It's like you're all over that book. And I'm like, John Irving. And actually, I'd worked with John Irving's brother, Steve, in the early gay liberation movement here. And it's about an abortion doctor in Maine. And they were right. I mean, it was just so much of that book spoke to me from my history of growing up in Maine. But in it, at one point, it's like he's thinking about why he became an abortion doctor in Maine. And he said this statement that he wanted to be of use. And that just resonated to me. And for some reason, my whole life, because it's not just the queer movement, I've been a social activist against racism, on class issues, unions, all sort of things. But for some reason, I grew up with the sense that if you knew of an injustice or if you you were conscious of something that needed to be addressed, that you had a social responsibility or a duty to do it. And that fire in me has never been expunged. And it still drives me to my own detriment sometimes. I just don't think I can escape it. It's like I get angry, even as an old man, at 71 years old, I'm still getting angry and want to do something concretely. And like I mentioned earlier, it's always been about the work. I can work with almost anyone if we have a task that we want to get accomplished that's agreed upon. And then the flip side of that coin is also to document that whole history. Mm-hmm. And everyone in this room will agree with that. And that's so the chosen family I have in my life is a circle of people like that. Now, I guess we have another phone call in. Amy's here from Portland before we get to Lois's answer to that question. Amy, welcome to
Hi.
Rainbow Reflections.
Thank you. I'm listening to WMPG, which I listen to all the time. My husband is actually a guest, a volunteer DJ on Sundays.
Uh-huh.
But my point is that I was reading an article, and people should Google this man, Dr. Magnus Hirschfeld.
Yep. Yep.
He started a sexology mm-hmm. clinic in 1919 in Berlin,
yep.
and
yes.
the Nazis came in and burned his library yep. in 1933. So yep. 90 years ago, yep.
mm-hmm.
he was already had documents about reassignment surgery
yep. mm-hmm.
and trans people. And, you know, he was gay and Jewish,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
the Nazis definitely came for him early.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just wanted to make that point
yeah.
because
yeah.
you're talking about how long it's been going on.
Right.
This guy had documents from before. He was actually an activist starting in 1897.
Absolutely.
In Germany. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing.
Thank yeah. you for that, Amy.
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thanks for the conversation.
All right.
Yeah. Something that Steve said that has really triggered, got me to articulate in my head, really why I've been here all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar thread in some ways and different in others. You know, I'm a woman. I was married to men twice before I found my way. And for me, people have always said, you know, well, I've got three kids and they're going to do great things, you know. I never had any children. I never wanted to have any children. I never did have any children. And I knew that I still wanted great things to happen, or at least significant things happen as a result of my life. And I couldn't depend on my kids to do that for me.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
If I wanted to have great things happen or significant things happen with my own, with life, I had to do it myself. And so I think that that was my driving force all along, is to say, what's the next thing? What's the, you know, and, but the other piece of it is the community I found. I have really two communities in my life, and some of them overlap. You know, I've got the, I've got the queer community, but I also have the feminist community. And I'm sitting here in a sweatshirt, a T-shirt that says, I run on feminism, caffeine, and social justice. Mm-hmm. And that really is the driving forces in my life. I'm glad I had the shirt on. And I gather I'm supposed to be quiet here.
No?
Okay.
No, you're good. Right. Yes.
So, but I mean, that's really my driving force, is that if something's going to happen as a result of my being here on this planet, I got to do it. So.
And Wendy, you?
Well, all of the things that you've said, both of you, really resonate for me. And the other piece of it is, when I looked around as a young person and I thought, who do I want to hang out with? It was the activists. I mean, they mm-hmm. were the people who were exciting and fun and daring and what I wanted to be. And that has not changed a bit. I look mm-hmm. around and I think, who do I want to spend time with? Who's doing mm-hmm. things that look interesting and important? And who's doing it with style and flair? And it's the queer community
mm-hmm.
and feminists mm-hmm. and anti-racist activists and union organizers. Mm-hmm. And all of those people mm-hmm. are my people for that reason. I look at them and I think, yeah,
mm-hmm.
that's where I want to go stand.
Yeah.
I think what's interesting for me is that what I think is not apparent to a younger person is, like, when the gay liberation movement started in the 70s, it was it was very much the more radical version of that, because mm-hmm. before it was like put on pants, put on a skirt, look very refined so that we stay mm-hmm. within the lines and we look acceptable. Whereas that was like, screw that, we're just going to be our wild, crazy selves. And within that movement, there was very much a push to be in solidarity with everybody else who happened to also be struggling against basically, quote unquote, the system mm-hmm. that was in place. And I think we've come back around to that. I think we left that a little bit, and I think we're coming back into that of, as a queer movement, we need to be in solidarity, like, with women, with feminism. We need to be mm-hmm. in solidarity with BIPOC. We need to be in solidarity, because our community mm-hmm. is all those communities on top of each other. We're not this monolith mm-hmm. in any way, mm-hmm. so.
Yeah, and an important point. If we are facing fascist mobilizations on the street, who are the to get the most social power possible organized on our side? I want to do a short segue to Magnus Hirschfeld.
Yeah.
Because there's also a link. Okay, I might be getting this wrong, but Harry or Henry Gerber
yes.
was in Chicago in the 1920s. He was in World War I, and when he was in Germany during World War I, as a gay man, he'd heard of Magnus Hirschfeld. And there's some American continuity to Hirschfeld, because Gerber's group, he was a postal worker,
yep.
was really, in a lot of ways, before anybody else... what's the other one? The Mattachine Society. Yeah. Before that was his group in Chicago.
Madonna's of Bilitis in San Francisco.
Wendy's got to go. I have to go.
Thank you, Wendy.
And I encourage you to call 780-4909 to call in. So Megan will take it from here along with Lois.
Yeah.
And Nella.
Yeah,
is
I'm
going to
be here as well. So.
Yeah. But thanks for tuning in, mm-hmm. and I'm going to listen from my car yeah. for the rest of the day.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah. And we are WMPG at Gorham, Portland, yeah. on the air.
Radio from the University of Southern Maine, mm-hmm. where Megan is in the library team there.
Yep. And you are listening to Rainbow Reflection, celebrating Pride in Maine. And let's go to some music. In a second or two. So if you're listening... definitely come out to Portland Pride. Is it raining? Yes. Is that what will stop us from Pride? No, not in this day and age. We are going to go out into the woods. Come on out into the pouring rain. It's not too bad here in Portland. I'm looking out the window as we speak, and it's quite lovely out there. So do come down. The parade is going to be starting down the town around like 1 o'clock, I believe. And then we're also going to have a tabling of lots of different organizations and stuff down in Deering Oaks Park. So do come out for that. It's still lovely. Come and see me at my table at the LGBTQ collection for the University of Southern Maine. I'm sure Equality Maine's going to be there. I'm sure the Equality Center ECC is going to be there. So come on down into Portland's Deering Oaks and come out in the rain. Show pride in your boots and raincoats and umbrellas.